It takes more than constantly upgrading homebrew because you can't remember the difference between brew update and brew upgrade to be a great engineer. This is Soft Skills Engineering episode 447. I'm your host, Dave Smith.
I'm your host, Jameson Dance.
Soft Skills Engineering is a weekly advice podcast for software developers who can't remember how not to spend the next 45 minutes watching your terminal be useless.
I think any package management system becomes popular enough that everyone hates how slow it is and how bloated it is.
Yeah.
Like that's a marker of success. If you build this excellent, incredible, beautifully abstracted, technically perfect, like a shiny diamond package manager system, and you make it really easy to consume dependencies, then bam, suddenly people add a ton of dependencies and then your ecosystem is bloated.
And you're a bad person and your package manager is bad.
Yeah, I also don't remember the difference between brew update and brew upgrade, but I do know that both of them are slow and will do a bunch of stuff.
Yes. Oh, boy.
I remember Rust got Cargo, the dependency manager, package management thing for Rust was a big point of pride. And now there's some backlash about Rust where everything installs a million packages and
yeah,
kind of the original Node sin.
Yep.
Was there a thing before Node that people got mad at for installing a bunch of packages, a programming language or environment or something?
I don't know. Before Node, I was just static linking every single library on Earth into my C++ binaries.
I would manage packages by copying the text onto my computer and then saving it there. I mean, Go kind of...
They do the same thing.
Discourages... Yeah.
Same thing as static linking is what I mean.
Well, yes, but for a while they didn't have an official way to manage third-party dependencies.
Right.
And their solution was like clone the repo yourself. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that's not what this show is about
no,
at all.
No.
Let's get out of here.
Something else.
I want to talk to you about WorkOS, who is sponsoring this episode. They have launched a ton of very useful stuff that you should know about. And we will tell you about it during this episode.
All right. Shall I thank our patrons?
Yes.
Okay, I think we have one one-time shout-out to Pastel Anxious and a bunch of weekly shout-outs to those folks that are generating. That's how you mix generous and donate into one word. It's generate. Wow.
They're generating happiness in Dave's soul.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. They're generating such a high level of contribution that we shout them out every week. They are. An anonymous anemone analyzed an alarming anomaly in an amateur animatronic anatomy.
That was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. Flawless.
That was my first take.
Wow.
Two fish in a tank. One says to the other, hey, mate, do you know how to drive that thing? Oh, we haven't had to quit your job for a while. You guys feeling okay? Alexander Kuznetsov, Chris Morton, Nick Molyneux, Michael Young.dev, attribute error, none type, object has no attribute to string, Javier Gonzalez, Chewy, .. Dave and Jameson's new, lovely, unpaid intern, Ted Timbrell, and now a moment of silence for victims of recent events. BecomeASeniorEngineer.com is a newsletter you should read. Unsalted French fries are morally objectionable. Dan from Drone Deploy, Chase, W. Norton, never is not just a crater on Mars, flamingo emoji. I like chicken, I like liver, meowmix, please deliver. Trash Panda, Git Status, Kyle Boss, Kent, C. Dodds, Nevar is not just a planet in the Vulcan system, Jenny Kim, The Stochastic Parrot, Helicone.ai, best observability tool for AI, Red Panda is best panda, Java is just discounted C# with worse documentation, Jonathan King's and I, beautiful functional user documentation, two-time shout-out to Angelical Cathor, WilliamAngel.net has cookies, and... Braden Gaines, John Grant, Brittany Ellick, Joe Grossberg. Every Monday, whether I hear Soft Skills Engineering, I think I'm going to change my username for next week. Then all of a sudden, it. And lastly, Cody Sale. There was some great discussion in the Soft Skills Engineering Slack community this week about how exactly are some of these words spelled. And my favorite one was that people don't hear Kent C. Dodds. They hear can't see dots.
Huh.
I can't see dots.
Maybe he can't.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you, and we appreciate the levity and joy you bring to our life and the way that you financially support the show also. It makes us keep going. That and the questions and our insatiable hunger to dominate the podcasting universe, which we'll crush under our thumbs.
Yes.
No, we don't have
slowly.
That last part. We just like doing this. Dave, do you want to read our... Wait, no. No,
it's your turn.
I want to read our first question.
I also want you to.
This is from a listener named Beth Jesus, who says, I am a mid-level engineer overleveled as a senior engineer in a FANG company. I got super lucky landing this high-paying remote job, but dang, I did underestimate the expectations for my senior level. I had no FANG experience before, just working at startups, flat hierarchies, just doing the heavy lifting coding. Now it is all about impact and multiplying impact across the team. I'm told I should do less IC work and more leading of projects and owning initiatives. Can you give me some general advice on what actions I can take to get from mid-level to senior level? I am not really sure what taking ownership really means in practice. These just seem like empty phrases to me without a meaning.
Mm. With a name like Beth Jesus, I wonder which FANG company we're talking about here.
Could be any of them.
Yeah, I mean...
just be coincidence.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, I was in this position for a while, except just bump it up one level where I was getting pressure to promote up to the next level. And I got a lot of, I would call it like unhelpfully ambiguous guidance from managers telling me how to do things like take more ownership, but not actually saying how to move up to the next level. It was hard.
Demonstrate more stick with it to itivism.
Yes. Oh boy.
Hey Dave, you need to embody our leadership principles.
Yes, I do.
At a higher level.
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly how it felt. I'm like, what do you want me to do? And really the bottom line answer was, I want you to get promoted because I look so good when my people get promoted.
Yeah. Yeah, but they wanted to pretend it was some kind of really mysterious and impactful coaching strategy where they give you advice that seems like it makes no sense, but really you discover inside of yourself the answer, and then you realize, ah, the advice triggered it.
Yes.
It was thanks to your advice to show more ownership that led me on a journey of self-discovery.
They learned this from the Zen masters.
Yes.
I never was enlightened, though. I just eventually left. Wait. I was enlightened. Now I see.
Wait a minute. This is all nonsense.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, though. Getting over-leveled at a FANG company, what a rare treat. Almost everyone I know. Actually, I'll tell you what. When I was at a FANG company, I tried to get about 7 people jobs there. 2 of them got jobs. 5 of them got rejected flat out. And the 2 that did get jobs both got down-leveled in the interview process.
Sometimes they pride themselves on that too. It's a status thing. Like, oh man, you are this level at some other place, but here at FANG Corporation number 7, we hold ourselves to a higher standard.
Yeah.
And our staff software engineers are your distinguished mega ultra principal engineers.
Yes. Our junior interns are your principal engineers over there at whatever the N stands for in FANG.
Yeah.
But it is a rare treat. I mean, the question asker plainly acknowledges it, that I'm making a great money remote job. That's surprising, actually, that that's even possible nowadays, based on what I've been hearing. So that's like two big lucky rolls of the dice here. A, you got an over-level job at a FANG company, and B, it's remote. So I don't know, like, just enjoy it. Well, I guess you can't enjoy it too easily, though. You'll get fired, probably, if you underperform in your level.
Yeah. I mean, that is the downside if they feel like they aren't meeting the expectations. Sounds like they're not, which makes sense. If you're coming from a startup, I think part of the change is going from doing excellent work on something someone else asked you to do, like producing the output they asked you to produce, to helping decide what the output should be. Maybe this is the same general vague nonsense phrases, but like, say you just crush code, right? You get a giant list of tickets, you churn through them, you build great abstractions, technically excellent, you complete the features on time and under budget. I think that feels like doing a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like at this FANG company, they're saying, yes, yeah, do all that, but you also have to do other stuff too.
Like stick-to-itivisms?
Yeah. Well, I think the other stuff is more like you're working above the level of abstraction of individual tickets. Like you are trying to achieve some broader outcome. And some contributions to that outcome might be do the tickets, write the code. But some of it might be like write the tickets or make the design doc or remind people, here's what we're building, and here's how important it is. And I don't know, there's like a shift from writing code to achieve the outcome someone asked you to achieve to like defining the outcomes and then doing yes. whatever is most effective at achieving those outcomes.
It's a good way to put it. And I've got bad news for Beth Jezos here, because if indeed this company is Amazon and you've been hired into a senior role, a senior level, you will not be graded just by meeting expectations at the senior level. You have to exceed them, because the way they do hiring there is they only hire you into a level if they, during the interview process, qualify you as better than 50% of people at the company at that level. So they already expect you to be performing in the top half of all senior engineers at the company. So this probably makes you feel worse, but I'm sorry.
Like, yeah.
The expectations are
thanks for the help, Dave.
Like double high. So all this is to say is do everything Jameson said with extreme urgency, because they're going to expect you to do it really well.
Another way to have impact, multiplying, so yeah, like leading projects and owning initiatives, that's pretty visible. Mm-hmm. Another way to be impactful is help a bunch of other people. That is sometimes less visible, and it's a common complaint to say, I feel like I do a lot of supporting work to help other engineers be more effective, and that's not recognized. Mm-hmm. So there's a trade-off with focusing on that, but it might be, maybe it's more natural for you to do that, and you kind of need to rely on like people seeing that and reporting it for it to be visible, because it's much fuzzier than like, the Apollo Initiative. Every company forever will always have something called the Apollo Initiative. So there's at least one where you are like, yes, Beth Jezos delivered on the Apollo Initiative.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying choose a high profile name that will stick.
Yeah.
And then do a project with that name.
Yeah, something with no ominous connotations, like Icarus or Prometheus or
Pompeii,
Pandora's Box, or yeah, Agamemnon. Surely he had a good ending to his life, right? One of those famous happy endings to Greek stories.
Oh yeah, classic Greek happy. What's the opposite of tragedy?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of the word. I don't know. Idyllic, blissful ending. I don't know. Well. What do you think?
Well, I think that when a company like Amazon says they want you to take more ownership, what they mean is they want you to impact other teams and benefit them. And I'm trying to put this in concrete terms that you can do, but get to know the teams that are adjacent to you, dependent on you, or to which you depend on, and try to find some way to make your collective lives better. Improve a process, fix a bad API, do something that will make that other team say, oh, I'm really glad that you fixed that thing or did that thing. And if you can accrue a few of those, that'll really bode well for you. I remember one time I was a dependency on another team. So we provided a platform level functionality that, I don't know, maybe a dozen other teams depended on to do their jobs. And someone reported an issue, and I did a really deep dive into figuring out what had gone wrong to make that issue happen. And I figured it out, and I wrote like a one or two pager doc about it. And then I just shared that with the team. And it was a really well-written doc, because it was like, you know, clear problem statement. Here's what happened. You know those postmortem docs like that Jameson loves that are really clear and succinct. And it kind of makes the author look kind of super heroic. Because it's like, oh yeah, look at all these awesome stuff you figured out and how clear cut it is and how straightforward the fix is. And I have tons of confidence in you and the solution. It's great. It was one of those docs. And it made the other team's manager actually so happy that he wrote a glowing review about me to my manager, and he kind of CC'd a bunch of high profile people. And I was like, oh, well, I thought I was just doing my job because we had a bug in our system and you depended on it and it was broken. But the way that other manager viewed it was that I was taking ownership and did something to benefit their team. And I was like, oh, great. Now I have a little bit of a glimpse into what ownership is.
I like that example because it is focused on helping. I could see a perverse definition of ownership being like you influence other teams to do stuff that you say, and then you get into all these games of like trying to convince them that your project is important and they should work on it. But it's a lot easier to make their lives better in some way than it is to say, like, everyone jump on board my thing.
Yeah.
I swear it'll be good for you.
I once had lunch with a director at Amazon, and he really opened my eyes about what they mean when they say take ownership. And so I'll say this to specifically help this listener, Beth Jezos, if that really is your name, which I'm pretty sure it is. But I think it's actually a really good principle for everyone, whether you work at Amazon or not. But this person said to me, ownership, most people don't understand what it means. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's a simple word. It just means you own something and you take good care of it. And he's like, no, but at a company like Amazon, what it means is that you don't just do your job narrowly, focusing on the duties you've been assigned, but you think about and act in the best interest of the entire company, even if it means that your and your team's immediate priorities have to take a back seat. And I realized, yes, that's what is really meant here. And I think when they when a company like a FANG company is trying to push you to level up, what they're trying to say is take a bigger view and increase your sphere of responsibility to do more good. And to take this all the way to the extreme, imagine the CEO of the company. Every part of that company ultimately is responsible, or the CEO is responsible for. And so you think to yourself, is there ever a point where a CEO would say, that's not my job? Not really, because ultimately anything that goes wrong is going to roll up to the CEO and it's going to be like, yeah, it's your job to make sure that doesn't go wrong. Now, is it your job to actually swing the hammer on the bathroom stall hinge that needs to be fixed? No, like it's not your job to swing the hammer, but it sure is your job to make sure that hammer gets swung right and that everything gets repaired correctly. And so same is true of a software engineer. You've got your little widget that you're responsible for, and at a FANG company, undoubtedly it's a small little thing that feels inconsequential. But when you raise your sights to your neighboring teams and try to make things better for everyone, that's what they mean by take ownership. And that, honestly, that's what it means to go to senior level as well.
I love that. That's great advice.
Oh, look at that. It's worth what you paid for it.
And that director's name? Beth Jesus.
Exactly.
He was way over leveled. All right. Have we answered the question?
I have one more thing to say on this. A really easy thing to do at your team level, because the thing is, moving from mid to senior sometimes just means doing things that only impact your immediate team, but the whole team and not just you. And one really easy way to do that is to improve your processes. Probably your deployment pipeline could be faster or more reliable, or less, you know, maybe there's some flakiness that fails sometimes. Maybe you've got a framework or a pattern you're using in your code that's not as good and you could propose a replacement. Things like that. These are all at the senior level and we'll get you credit.
All right. Now we've answered it.
Now I'm done. I've answered.
Good job.
You helped.
Thank you.
Jameson, we've been talking about WorkOS a lot and they have added some very useful stuff to their product. Now WorkOS is not just for adding SSO to your app. It's so much more.
They've launched some cool stuff and we will tell you about it. WorkOS lets you not reinvent permissioning with their new fine-grained authorization system, which is based on a Google system white paper thing called Zanzibar. Very fun word to say.
Yes.
I've actually built some fine-grained auth systems myself, and they had a way more boring name. And also, I had to maintain all the code myself.
Yes. Also, check out WorkOS's radar feature, which can block bad signups from your app. So things like bots, fraud, and impossible travel, like someone using a VPN or proxy to trick your signup system. They can detect all of that for you and help you avoid fraudulent signups.
They launched an entitlements feature that integrates with Stripe, so your app can automatically give access to accounts that have paid for new features. I've also built one of these myself, and it can be a huge pain in the butt. So nice to put that on someone else.
Yes, totally. To me, the coolest feature they launched is a B2B app starter kit for Next.js. WorkOS will actually help get your Next.js app essentially from zero to one super fast. They provide authentication, billing, user management, audit logs, and a ton more. And I got to say, if there's an easier way to start a B2B SaaS app than WorkOS, I can't think of it.
Do not forget the passkey support. It's effortless for you to add passkey support, and your users will love it.
Check out workos.com. and try out all these amazing new features.
Dave, do you want to read our next question?
Yes. This comes from an anonymous listener who says, I have had a bit of time while running a 40-minute build, so I looked into open pull requests. One PR caught my eye, and I started to read through it, and left a comment with a suggestion for a small change. All in all, sounds good probably, but the caveat to this is that PR was marked as draft. P.S. I've done this before, too, on accident. I was thinking that it would be useful for the author of the PR to already get some suggestions during development, but the response got me thinking. That author passively aggressively mentioned that the PR is in draft and that there is more work to do. Am I the jerk for commenting on a draft PR? Second question, what other things should I pay attention to in code reviews to not be a jerk?
Ooh, second one is hard. I'm going to skip that. Am I the jerk for commenting on a draft PR? I don't think so. The caveat to this is cultural expectations vary wildly, and it is possible that your company has a culture that draft PRs have this sacred meaning of, like, you just get to kind of squint at it and be in awe of its majesty and get hyped for what's coming, but don't actually look at it and give feedback. That sounds weird, though. So I think it's most likely that most cultures have an expectation that drafts are drafts. You know how you write a rough draft of something and famously you yell at everybody who gives you feedback on it? Like, hey, I didn't write this for feedback. I wrote it for...
For what?
Glory? I don't know. Like, that's literally the point of a draft. It's right. Like, you do it for feedback.
Well, in the case of a PR draft, you do it for backup. I think you're like, oh, crap, this is getting too big and it's still on my computer. I got to get it out of here.
Yeah, I want to get it out of here. Yeah, it's possible. There is a thing that can happen where someone has kind of a vision of where they want to go. And maybe your comment was like, well, have you thought about security of this yet? And they're like, well, yeah, it's not done yet. Of course, I didn't do the part I hate, which is security,
right?
For some reason.
And I definitely wasn't going to ignore it and hope it got through the final PR review.
Yeah, so maybe they're feeling a little defensive about it, but I don't think it's wrong to comment on a PR. Usually if a draft PR appears, I would expect the PR creator to give some context around it and say, hey, here's this idea I'm exploring, and sort of outline expectations for how they want people to engage with it. Maybe the expectations are like, it's hot garbage, so ignore it. I don't know. You can look at it if you want, but know that it is a mess and I'm getting to it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're saying, I'm trying out this new pattern and I want feedback because it would be a big change. And what do you think?
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
Draft could mean, it could be a signal to say, I don't intend to merge this as is, so don't worry about it, but feel free to give feedback. But it could also mean, I'm just backing up my work in progress. Please don't comment on it because the whole thing's going to change. Maybe we need a new flag in GitHub.
I think that exists already and is called a branch. Just push your branch up. Don't make a draft.
Don't make a PR out of it?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a good point. Or maybe it's like, I'm still writing the PR description field. So everything will make sense after you read that beautiful markdown that I'm typing.
The markdown is a draft, though. And don't comment on the markdown draft before it is done.
I've done a comment that's even dumber on a PR, if you'd like to hear that, or my little story. So I'm currently a CTO, and so I don't read nearly every PR that my team produces because there's like 20 engineers, so I can't do it all. But I do occasionally read some for areas that I'm particularly interested in or that I know. And one time I left just a really stupid comment. And you got to remember, like, when you're the CTO and you leave a stupid comment, it's like 10x stupider than anyone else, I'm afraid. That's how I feel anyway. So I was commenting on some code that I did not realize was actually inside of a unit test. And I was like, hey, for this to be more robust and handle a wider variety of user input, you might want to consider this other function instead of this regular expression you're using. And then later he was like, oh, okay, I guess I can change that. Like, you know, because that this is why it's so much worse for a CTO to make a bad comment. He was like, oh, yeah, sure, I can change that. And then later I realized, oh my gosh, it was a unit test. There is no user input. There's just like three strings it has to handle. And they're all written right there, like three lines above. So don't worry about this robust, you know, input handling. So I don't know what's worse, commenting on a draft or commenting on code that you didn't realize is not actually production code.
Yeah, low context comments can often be worse than nothing. I have damaged things by swooping in and saying, I'm so busy, but oh, I want to look at this thing. And oh, I'll glance through it and squint and here's my knee-jerk reaction. And it's just like so wrong and missing important details and et cetera.
Yep.
What is the worst PR thing I've done? I don't know. I can't remember any giant sins. One time I was running a few teams. And there was a project I was excited about. So I went and reviewed a PR and I saw it was hanging out in limbo for a while. And I squinted at it and was like, yeah, I don't know. It seems good. Hit approve. It got merged. And later on, another engineer on the team pulled me aside and said very kindly, hey, please don't do that. That had some bugs in it. You didn't know the requirements. Like you didn't.
Yeah.
You really had no business approving that. In a kind way. I mean, I'm shortening it here, but their concern was justified. I was just like, code, yeah, good. Let's ship it. Let's move forward. That's awesome. Keep going. And the way I expressed that was by saying approve. And then it got merged and then they had to clean it up afterwards. So
I'm just imagining the hour of time that coworker spent writing that message to you to make sure it wasn't, you know, hurtful and diplomatically perfect.
Yeah. I would like to think I am easy to give feedback to, but no one can erase power structures.
Exactly. So. I was just thinking, like, if my boss had done that, I'd be like, okay, I got to say this just right.
Yeah, I gotta figure it. Hang on, I gotta figure this out.
Yeah.
Let alone the time to actually like clean up the technical impact.
Right. Yeah. So, redirecting.
Yeah, I got my hand justifiably slapped. And I either reviewed carefully for real or did not review after that, which I think are both improvements. And with that story that doesn't help you, question is answered.
Yeah. So your conclusion is not a jerk?
Not a jerk. No, I don't think so. I think, if anything, there's a misunderstanding here. They did not explain what they're expecting. And I don't know, it's kind of on them. If they don't want feedback, then don't throw up a PR.
Fair. If you want to be like super cautious about not being a jerk and you also want to comment on a draft PR, all you have to say is, I know this is draft and a lot of it might change, but I just happened to read it and here's a couple of comments for what they're worth, and then throw it out.
Yeah. Yeah. You could kind of soften it and say, hey, maybe you're thinking about this already, but here's the thing I noticed.
Exactly. There you go. Instant non-jerk move.
What other things should I pay attention to in code reviews to not be a jerk?
That's a long list.
Yeah. I've got one. You need to read the room in terms of the business impact of the change and the business pressure around the change versus your like technical nitpicks.
Yes.
Some people who pride themselves on giving extensive feedback on PRs, and they can always find stuff. And I think that's a whole other issue that I have feelings about. But sometimes there's a thing that has to get done right away, and it is not the time to nitpick over variable naming conventions or like, yeah, it's got to work, but like, oh, you should have used a switch statement instead of an if else or
yes. Meanwhile, prod is burning down.
Yeah, if prod is on fire, there's this release that has to go out and this is blocking it. Like, now is not the time.
Yeah.
You hold those things in your heart and let them build up resentment that explodes in a future code review.
Right, exactly. It's just
that,
like,
is the time.
It's like resentment debt. It'll get paid back eventually.
Yeah.
I can think of one thing you could do to not be a jerk. There's probably 1,000 more, but something that really gets to me is when people make performance claims in your PR without proof. I remember I had someone say, Dave, you need to reorder the two expressions in your if statement so that it will be faster, because this one...
Yeah, it'll short circuit the evaluation.
And I was like, okay. And I thought to myself, now you've put me in a real pickle, because I'm pretty sure you're wrong. You haven't provided any evidence, and now I have to go and provide evidence to debunk your claim. So what did I do?
Yeah, this is the old, it takes an order of magnitude more effort to refute BS than to spout it.
Yes. Oh, maybe more than one order of magnitude. Anyway, sure enough, I went offline. I wrote a bunch of stupid Java code and I timed it with the expressions in different orders. And actually my way was faster. And so now what am I supposed to do? Now I got to reply to the comment and say, actually, you're wrong. The way I did it was faster. And by the way, in this situation, speed does not matter. Like, the difference is, even if it was 10 times slower than the way you think, you know, than it is, it still wouldn't matter. This is part of a workflow that takes 10 minutes, and this is a parallel job that takes a tenth of a second, and we're talking about maybe making it take half of a tenth of a second.
Yeah, performance is tricky because you either have to be a world-class expert to spot things ahead of time, or you have to have something that's slow and then go back and make it faster, I feel like. But I agree that my micro benchmark shows this is a problem is not compelling.
Yeah. All right. Well, did we rid the world of PR jerk behavior with those two simple comments?
We reduced the amount of it, I think. Good enough.
By an unmeasurable amount?
A positive impact. That's all I'm looking for.
Yes. Directional, not magnitude.
Yes. All right. Have we answered the question? I think yes.
I think so. We definitely gave an answer.
To which question? You will be the judge. Exactly. Sometimes we do turn a question into a different question that we wish it was, because it was more fun to answer. Yes. Maybe we did
accident.
It this time. Maybe not. Yeah. What can people do if they want their own questions answered?
Go over to softskills.audio and click the Ask a Question button, where you can fill out our handy dandy little form. Thank you to everyone who does that each week. Your questions flow in like water to my body that keeps my soul hydrated.
Dave has an IV hooked up to his arm full of ground up pieces of paper from the Excel spreadsheet he's printed out. It's very unhealthy, which is why most of our budget for the podcast goes into medical treatments for him.
That's right.
He has to be on dialysis to filter out all the bits of paper floating around in his blood. But it wouldn't be possible without you.
Yes.
Thank you, listeners.
Thank you for providing all that paper.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.